Blog Talk Radio.
Golden dreaming beauty man, is it only fantasy? Sometimes one can't help but wonder, will it ever truly be? Some people keep on saying, all is illusion and lies. Why is it so hard to believe? There are better days to see. So it seems like the world is tumbling down. It's the darkest time of night, right before.
Yes, here it comes, blessed souls. Soul Class 321, in search of ancient authentic Torah. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this blessed world of the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, the infinite creator. We're alive because we're staying alive. In the creator's blessings to be alive at this most existential of moments. Welcome, everyone. This is your cyberspace Torah activist, Don Zusio Goodman. And our program starting right now, live from Turtle Island in the USA, Unifying Souls. Actually, we plan to vibe out on Genesis chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, quote, "And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Creator had respect for Abel and to his offering. But for Cain and to his offering he had not respected. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell." Uh-oh, blessed souls. We have a problem here, or more accurately, there was a problem for two brothers over 5,000 years ago, and to make matters worse, Cain became depressed. Oy vey! Is there a psychiatrist, a therapist, or a social worker in the house? Well, maybe we can avoid these practitioners if we can learn from the lessons of those Torah verses. As well, we hope to vibe out on Rambam, Chabad Chassidus, Breslov Chassidus. A brief discussion concerning what Hanukkah means today and what it mean over 2,000 years ago to the Jewish nation and how it applies to each and every nation, this generation, the seven Noahide commandments, connected to that as well. Meanwhile, may you and your loved ones be blessed by the source of all blessings, the Ein Sof, infinite creator. And joining me live on the program today, as first of all, we're just going to turn down the music with asking of forgiveness from Rev. Isaac Baton, blessed brother and prayer partner from the famous Frankel Shul, because we want to start the shoe. Here we go. Sorry, Rev. Isaac. Oy vey. Joining me live right now is Rambam teacher, Rambam student, and activist for the dissemination of teachings of Rambam, Dennis Williams. Good morning, Dennis.
Shalama. Which some people say was used long before the word shalom was used, because it means in Aramaic, hello or peace.
Right. Well, that it was. Well, let's go on to, let's introduce our next host, co-host Dennis. We have also Dennis. We already introduced Dennis Ryan. We now have Ron Williams, our Ben Noah scholar. Ron, good morning to you, sir. And Dennis is on the line with us as well.
Good morning, Dennis and Don.
Boker Tov.
Dennis, Don, and Ron. Doesn't sound like a law firm to me.
Maybe we could get a barbershop quartet out of it.
Yeah, well, you bring the scissors, I'll bring the barber saw. Anyway, with that being said, blessed souls, I just want to point out before we get swinging into the swing of things, anything that myself or Ron, or Dennis, Ron, and myself have to say, we are speaking as individuals who have a certain level of commitment, between ourselves and the Creator and other blessed human beings like yourselves, all blessed and anointed, never to be disappointed, to know that you have a divine image will help you get off in scrimmage in the game of life. We should be filled with no strife, jealousy, or unnecessary hatred, that we represent no organizations and our sole intent. While we may agree to disagree and disagree to agree at certain points during the show, we don't really bring those points out, but rather to encourage you blessed souls who are listening live or in the blessed archive version to hear this information and then do your own research. I also want to send out, before we go into the first part of the show, a big shout out to Rebecca Vanderwerth from North Carolina, who was our co-hostess last week in the place of Ron. Hopefully she'll call in today. Also, big shout out to Carl Whitehead down, I think he's in North Carolina. And also, big shout out to anyone else who is listening to our program. Well, that include Bas Noah, Julia Taya down in Texas, Charles Gruber down in Texas, Beatnik Joshua Sirk in Binghamton, New York. And with that being said, blessed souls, you know, this Thursday, as we know, it is, in fact, Thanksgiving. And normally we start off with a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but I just want to make a sort of commentary, and I'll ask Dennis and Ron and Dennis to chime in on this. Blessed souls, it is in all humility and also the sense of merit that we of Israel start our morning prayers every day during a regular lunar calendar year, 354 days a year, or in a year like this one we're in, 5,774 years, blazing and grazing creation, where we actually have a 13-month calendar year, so it balances out with the solar calendar year, which is about 384 days a year. We start our prayers with saying, offering praise to the Most High, or giving thanks. And this is the verse that we pluck from, which was composed by, I believe, King David. It's interesting. I have the English translation, but without the source note. But I'll pick it up hopefully in a minute when I ask Dennis or Ron to comment where we get this. Oh, I'm sorry. This is coming from the Book of Chronicles, chapter 16, verse 8. So you can go to the Book of Chronicles, book number 1, chapter 16, verse 8, and it goes like this. Offer praise to the Creator, proclaim His name, make His deeds known among the nations, sing to Him, chant praises to Him, speak of all His wonders. Now, this was a chant, a prophetic verse that was written by, I believe, King David, David HaMelech. And it's not only for the nation of Israel to proclaim out to the nations, but the nations should be proclaiming out to the nations that we should be offering praise to the Creator. So it's with a little bit of, how shall I say, although I'm very happy that you have a national holiday here on Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Uniting Souls, actually, unifying souls, actually, but that is singled out as one day, and the practical outcome that comes out of it is called Black Friday, where people are encouraged to shop until they drop, is not, I think, really in the spirit of what we would consider to be a genuine thanks and service to the Creator and communing with other people. And adding to my sort of pain is that, unfortunately, I saw in a very large, probably the Jewish press ran an advertisement for a shopping mall out in Long Island where, you know, and the Jewish press is recognized as a paper where primarily Torah observant Jews of all levels, whether it be Hasidic or Lithuanian style or modern Orthodox style, and even for those who are a little bit less than that in terms of their Torah observance, where an advertisement is taken out to encourage Jews to become so consumer-oriented that they should develop this mindset that they should shop until they drop. Well, I would like to consider this as to be that like that salmon fish that swims upstream and would seem to be a suicide mission, although I don't plan on doing anything like that, that I would say, how about we start giving until we get tired? Or how about caring until we want to drop? Or how about loving until our muscles say stop? You know, I understand the business of America is to do business, but the business of America also, with the plurality that's involved in the cultural mores of this country, is that we have the ability to encourage ourselves and the different communities we're part of to not just give thanks one day a year. And by the way, this is, I was surprised to find out just yesterday that giving as an official American holiday is only since 1863, and none other than Abraham Lincoln was the one who officially was behind the drive to make it an official holiday in the United States of America. So I just want to give that as a little bit of reflection that, okay, it's a great day that people and friends can get together and there's football games. Okay, those are people's choices. You know, playing football is not against the Torah. I just wouldn't advise anyone to play it on the professional or high school level. I mean, I myself played, so maybe I'm double talking. But the idea of giving thanks, was so it should not just be embedded in our head as a one-day thing. Because we've Israel, even among the righteous and the not-so-righteous, even people who struggle with trying to do the right thing and who try to keep some level of Torah observance, we acknowledge from the beginning of our prayers every morning, give thanks. Now, one of the interesting thing about the word give thanks in Hebrew, it's called hodu. Now it's by divine providence. It happened to be that the turkey, which is considered to be, I guess, one of the festive dishes on Thanksgiving, for those who are not vegetarian or vegan, that the word, that the Hebrew word for turkey is hodu. So I don't know how to connect the dots. So I can just say it's some level of divine providence that the bird, the fowl, the whatever you want to call it, the primary feat, the main course of the Thanksgiving dinner, in Hebrew is called hodu, where we should be beginning, where we begin our every day of our prayers, and among the children of Israel, and though I'm sure there are children of Noah who also make this prayer, hodu. So again, I don't know how to connect the dots, but I just want to stimulate the thought process and the conversation. And with that being said, we'll turn to our senior statesman, Dennis Ryan. Comments, questions, concerns about this issue?
The issue is one of a historical nature, Don. When the first people, pilgrims, came over to this country, there were turkeys everywhere, wild turkeys. And it wasn't until the Indians showed the pilgrims what to do with the turkey did they decide to make a feast of it. However, even older than that is an old Latin expression, and that's carpe diem. Seize the day. What happens is God gives you the day. Now, what are you going to do with it? Now, we're talking about one day, but one day is repeated over and over and over. And I agree with you, Don. It's a shame that we have to have one day to give thanks when personally, to me, it should be every day because God is constant. And therefore, you cannot honor God in a special way or think you're honoring him on a particular day because he's there every day. What are you going to do with every day? Personally, I'd even say every day should be Christmas because people are giving, loving, happy, and feel blessed. That's something that we should practice every day. But somehow or another, especially in this country, we manage to localize it to one day for commercial purposes. And yes, I feel bad too that a newspaper dedicated to the deep beliefs of religion-based ideas and concepts would actually cower to an idea of mammon. That is, let's make some money on a particular day. It is sad because, in effect, the day becomes an expression of thanks or joy or giving or blessing. And we evaluated as to how much money we actually produced on that day. It's a sad time, really.
Ron, your take on these matters.
Well, I agree with both you and Dennis. But there's also a feeling of giving and getting, where you do a good deed and you're actually rewarded for it. So on Thanksgiving, people give thanks, and it's actually giving, Thanksgiving, where, you know, you give thanks. And on Black Friday, you feel like you receive a reward in terms of a really good deal, reduced prices and everything. So it's very easy to be fooled by this type of system. On on the other hand, this country, you know, coming from a different culture, mm-hmm. I've seen that America is based on business, commerce, you know, classic exchange of money, as opposed to where I came from, where it was more of a socialistic system.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I see the terms in terms of the development and the amount that you're able to do, even though a socialist system is supposed to be for the people, I see that people end up being deprived tremendously, as opposed to this country where it's supposed to be diametrically opposite in terms of everybody basically, you know, conduct business and to the best that you can is the amount that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I... As much as I see the commercialization of everything, I see that there is a benefit also to that in the sense where the commerce keep everything going. And as much as we spend money, we allow those who work, as we do, to also acquire bonuses and, you know, a lot of financial incentives for that we conduct. I don't condone turning every, you know, religious or national holiday into a money-making opportunity. But unfortunately, that's what it, you know, everything in excess becomes excessive, so.
Right. I just one point. Why, maybe Dennis, you know this, because what is the connotation of black? What is the idea of black connected to Friday to be a day of, like a day where people can become so euphoric to make so many purchases in one particular day with great savings? What's the connotation of, what does black have to do with Friday?
Black has to do with Friday, not because of Friday. It happens to be the day after Thanksgiving, and that sets off the Christmas buying season. So from a commercial viewpoint, before all the Christmas lights go on or anything, do it on a dark day, the first dark day that you can start the Christmas season of selling. So that's why they call it Black Friday.
Uh-huh. Not the fact that great profits are reaped. I mean, usually when something, a business is running in the black, it means it's a profitable day. So it has nothing to do with that?
That's what I thought.
It's all based on greed, Don.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, but I would just think, too, that, you know, let's face it. I mean, let's be very real here, because Torah is not necessarily the most politically correct system. It's not even a political system. It's a series of instructions from the Creator to us as the part of the human family experience. I mean, people are based, you know, Jews are not the predominant culture, but you know, for instance, this coming Friday, it will be already Hanukkah. And I know for Christian people of the Christian faith, they're buying for the gifts to be exchanged and given over on December 25th. So why not connect? I'm just curious. Why not connect it with a color, or you know, like Rainbow Friday Day, you know. Again, if you're saying it's that way, Dennis, fine. I'm just saying, more splashy, more positive?
No, Don, it's like selling a car. You don't want a car that has rainbow colors, do you? Nobody does. But they do surveys and say, what's the best color that people like? Unfortunately, the darker the color, people do like. So why not go all the way and make it black?
Okay. Now, with that being said, I just found something very exciting, Dennis. I think you'll find this very interesting, that there's a book called The Letter in the Spirit. As everyone who listens to our show, we try to pull out letters on a weekly basis to start every show from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it happens to be from this book, The Letter in Spirit, there happens to be a 115-page section in this part of the book called To the Perplexed. And, of course, we know the seminal works, if not the seminal work, depending on whose opinion you're holding by Rambam, Maimonides, who we'll say very quickly to after this discussion with Dennis reading from something from Maimonides. So this section is about 115 pages of letters, which we'll hopefully read a letter at a time, from the Rebbe to people who were perplexed. So we'll start off with this letter that was written to someone in Manchester, England, and this letter goes back to 5712, which either would have been 1951 or 1952, but it does not say the date when this letter was written. So the Rebbe mentioned this, that the Rebbe responds to a person that they're feeling down. So the herb responds, you seem to be disturbed because you feel that you have not achieved the proper level in Torah, which then is this written scripture and also includes the oral tradition, and the commandments, and cannot see yourself getting anywhere, which makes you downhearted. Leaving the details of your complaints aside, I wish to make several observations, and we'll pass along these observations to Dennis and Ryan. I'm really tongue-tied today. Dennis and Ron and Ron and Dennis. Number one of the complaints that Rebbe makes, of the complaints which we're not really reading about, but the observations of the complaints, Rebbe responds, number one, a feeling of dissatisfaction oneself is actually a good sign, for it indicates vitality and the urge to rise and improve oneself, and the latter calls for a two-part effort. Withdrawal from the present state and seeking to get to a higher level. And the Rebbe referenced a teaching from his father-in-law, the sixth Lubavitch Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson of Lubavitch. So, you know, let's break it down. Dennis, the Rebbe is saying that feeling dissatisfied can actually serve as an impetus for growth. What's your take on these matters?
A friend of mine told me last week, oh, God has forsaken me. And I said to him, how can you say that? You're here and you exist based on all the decisions you made. If you had to do it all over again, would you repeat yourself? I said, don't bother to ask the question. I know the answer. You are in a bad position because you placed yourself there. God didn't place you there. You had opportunities in life to do good, positive things. Did you do it? I said, don't bother answering the question. I know the answer. So the motivation is that we in our lifetime can always do better. But do we want to? What is gonna take us out of the depths and bring us into the light? Now, even Maimonides was depressed. But it took him a while, and he had to reconfigure his thinking so that you answer the question of where is your God? Is your God in your head, in your heart, or in your backside? Where is your God? Because he better be in the right place so you can make the correct decisions and be motivated to have a better life. But don't blame God for where you are. You made the decisions.
Ron?
Speaking from more of a personal perspective, I think the essence of feeling like you haven't acquired what you should have in the spiritual realm, that is actually the driving force that will actually get you to that point in which you feel more accomplished. I myself have had a very difficult time understanding certain words, especially the Hasidus, in which you're very familiar with, because you and I have both, you've learned with me. And I realized that whenever we experience a limitation or a dissatisfaction, that in and of itself is the accelerator to get us to the next point.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's actually a good thing. And King David had said in one of his Psalms that if I made my bed in the heavens, you're there. If I made my bed in the abyss, you're there. That creates us whatever level we're on. And if we see him in whatever experience we're experiencing, we will more understand it's a learning and a guiding experience as opposed to a bad or a good experience. Because in every bad, there could be so much good. We just have to look for it because it is there.
Mm-hmm.
They said the creator creates the cure before the disease. So with that belief in mind, you know that there's salvation at all times in whatever situation you're placed in.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I'd like to make point number two, and we're not going to finish later because Dennis, several weeks ago, Ron, or maybe it was several months ago, you know, with me, it takes me a while to internalize the point. Dennis had suggested, and I'm public going to thank him for this advice, to break down these teachings a little bit more chunk by chunk so people can digest them, because I think both of you had such valid and wise insights. I'm just going to share point number two because it's intimately connected to point number one the Rebbe made, and then we'll move on with Dennis to read a teaching from Rambam. So the Rebbe then addressed the idea that if one has an urge to improve oneself, now in that urge to improve oneself, all of a sudden a person becomes downhearted and feels inertia, you know, sluggish like a rock. The person should know this is the work of the Yetzer Hara, this is which is a Hebrew word for the evil inclination within the person, or basically a person falling prey to that devilish angelic being having some sort of influence on him. Basically, this is a satanic device insidiously working its way into the person's consciousness to become depressed over the idea one has made the brilliant realization they should improve themselves. So what happens when the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, infects a person? The intent is to prevent the human being from carrying out good intentions connected with Torah biblical study and Torah biblical commandments. And the false and misleading voice of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, should be stifled and ignored. Besides, as the author of the Tanya, one of the Rebbe's ancestors, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, whose day of liberation was just celebrated this past Shabbos and Friday, because it was a two-day celebration. And for those who want to learn about it, they can go to chabad.org. He mentions in chapter 25 that even one good deed creates an everlasting bond and communion with the Creator. Thus, a feeling of despondency coming out of the practical, so to speak, a practical outcome of one's realization, one wants to make self-improvement. The idea of feeling despondent is not only out of place, but now a person in their realization they should improve themselves has become despondent, have actually placed a stumbling block for him or herself to actually serve the Creator and, of course, to be in communion with other human beings. And this matter is more fully explained in the above chapter, in chapter 25 in Tanya, and the chapters that follow in Tanya. Dennis, the idea that a person realizes they got to make changes and they decide, oh, so the first thing I'll do is become depressed. How do we respond to that?
The road to heaven is paved with deeds, but the human must start the first deed. You must start somewhere and get the satisfaction of doing one deed. They don't happen by chance. It's a human behind it who made a conscious decision to do something good. So if you can do one good deed, you can do more. But unless you step off taking the first step in the right direction, nothing is going to happen.
True. And I just want to mention, when a person, this is brought down in Chassidus and Kabbalah, and it's probably even brought down in psychology today as well, when you engage in something positive, like say you help a person cross the street, an elderly person who's walking with a walker or a cane, not only are you physically escorting them, but there's the energy exchange between you and the person who is appreciative of your act of kindness towards him or her, and also the sense of fulfillment at that very moment that you're helping that person. And it's not just that you feel good in your feet and your toes and your heart. There's actually, at that moment, there's positive brain chemistry transpiring in your brain, and you're building a network within your brain that tells you a simple message, which hopefully will be embedded in your revealed conscious, not just in your subconscious. Doing good makes you feel good. So, Ron, a person has done good in their mind to say, yeah.
I just want to interrupt you. Don't stop there, please. Because if you help somebody across the street, you and that person may have a bond of positive accomplishment. Think
true.
Of other people who witnessed that deed. That's the motivation for other people. We don't know how far it goes and what type, how wide the network is. But that one deed triggers the deeds.
So what you're saying, Dennis, is that the street becomes a classroom.
Where humans are, they must learn. And we must learn very simple things and positive things. As good, positive, unnoticed.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dennis. Ron, now I know you're a student of learning Tanya. And I'm sure the fact that I mentioned Tanya perks up your ears and has some things stirring within you. The idea of a person makes that decision, I want to improve myself, then he falls into despondency as opposed to what the Alter Rebbe says, do something good, and you'll see you're on the path of self-improvement. Any comments about this matter?
All was created for the benefit of man, even that satanic force, the evil inclination. The problem is we have to learn the workings of it. And when we subdue that inclination, we can ascend to levels way beyond what we first thought we could. But if we surrender to that, then we will just keep descending. And at that point in time is where we need the guidance of someone who has already ascended or understand the workings of the evil inclination. In terms of doing good, we are being... In the human experience, as you so mentioned often, and I've come to embrace that terminology, everything is as contagious as a common cold. Doing a bad deed also is contagious. Doing good is very contagious. As they say, laughter is contagious, but also is sadness. So we have to make that decision, which expression we need to be contagious to be, to spread amongst our you know, fellow humans. And that's a choice that we have to make. I've been working on it recently on an understanding where when we ask God to help us to choose the right action, the right course of action to take, we're not asking him for him to alleviate us of the choice making system. What we're asking him is for guidance and help within that system. Mm-hmm. Because with free choice is where we're able to actually refine and develop ourselves in the proper direction. So my conclusion so far in that is that we ask God for the guidance in making that free choice in which He has given to us.
Ron, beautiful. Now we're going to move on to a teaching from the master of self-improvement, the promoter of the culture of return, the Nesher Godel, the great eagle Rambam. Dennis, what would you like to share with us today from the great eagle?
The great what? Eagle.
Rambam
said eagle.
We talked about it last week. He was called Nesher Godel, the great eagle, because his perspective within human experience and Torah consciousness was that he soared over the in his generation. And some say from Moses to Moses, there never arose another like Moses. I mean, I'm assuming that the Messiah will have even a greater perspective than Rambam, but Rambam gives us some sort of inkling of what we should expect of the Messiah himself by his teachings of sagacity and morality and plurality and positive thinking, healthy lifestyles, et cetera, et cetera. So what are you going to share with us today, sir?
Well, I always treated the eagle as a source of wisdom, and the Rambam is a source of wisdom. So I'm going to be reading here from the Guide for the Perplexed, page 396, 397. Now, this is almost at the end of this great book, or this masterpiece of genius, we'll call it. It has less than 400 pages in it, but what it has something in there for everybody on different levels. So he's at the end of the great work here, and he wants to leave us with one idea before he ends. So he bases it on a prophet called Jeremiah. And let me just read the small statement that Jeremiah makes that has impressed the man with so much wisdom. And that is, I'm quoting, "Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, nor let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me." That's Jeremiah 9 through 22. So when this next passage that I read from Rambam, when he says the word prophet, he's meaning Jeremiah in this case. So I just felt like I had explained that to the listeners before I started reading this. So let me read. And Rambam says, "Having stated the sublime ideas contained in that scriptural passage and quoted the explanation of our sages, we will now complete what the remainder of that passage teaches us. The prophet does not content himself with explaining that the knowledge of God is the highest kind of perfection. For if this only had been his intention, he would have said, but in this let him who glorieth glory, that he understandeth and knoweth me. And would have stopped there, or he would have said, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am one, or that I have not any likeness, or that there is none like me, or a similar phrase. He says, however, that man can only glory in the knowledge of God and the knowledge of his ways and his attributes, which are his actions, as well have shown in expounding the passage. Let me now, show me now thy ways, Exodus 28:13. We are thus told in this passage that the divine acts, which ought to be known and ought to serve as a guide to our actions, are hesed, loving kindness, mishpat, judgment, and zikata, righteousness. Another very important lesson is taught by the additional phrase, in the earth. It implies a fundamental principle of the law. It rejects the theory of those who boldly assert that God's providence does not extend below the sphere of the moon, and that the earth with its contents is abandoned, that the Lord had forsaken the earth, Ezekiel 8:12. It teaches as he has taught by the greatest of all wise men in the words, the earth is the Lord's, Exodus 9:29. That is, providence extends to the earth in accordance with its nature, in the same manner as it controls the heavens in accordance with their nature. This is expressed in the words, that I am the Lord which exercise loving kindness, judgment, righteousness in the earth. The prophet thus, in conclusion, says, for these things I delight, saith the Lord.
Ron, any comments, questions, or concerns about this teaching?
No, not as yet.
I mean, I have to admit, too, I mean, this is, I don't think I can, you know, we talk about the Nesher Gadol, the great eagle, there's not much to add to it as much as this is a teaching that needs to be reviewed time and time again if a person is generally within the realm of consciousness that they want to dedicate themselves to living a life dedicated to serving the Creator and being in communion with other human beings in a way that's sustainable and appreciably positive, not just in the part of that person who wants to make that commitment to being a servant of the Most High, but that others can feel that that person's service is not one that's overbearing upon them. And that's what I have to say. Dennis, anything else you'd like to add to that wondrous teaching of Rambam?
Yes, I would. This is a prime example of Maimonides, of his completeness. In other words, when you hear this, it's like he's taken all the variations into consideration and he's condensed it into one complete idea. And that idea doesn't give you much wiggle room because the eagle has spoken and he said, this is it. Can you understand it? Can you believe it? And can you practice it?
Beautiful. At this point, blessed souls, we're going to take our normal segue musical break. Actually, this will be an a cappella. A one young man whose music I am appreciating more and more, and I not only do I wish for him to have a huge success commercially, spiritually, financially, whatever you want to say. I also hope that he mentioned when I did an interview with him about a month ago that he is unmarried yet. Hopefully in the coming year he'll be married. Now, he did a version of a classic Chabad Nigun, which is a song, which was something that stemmed out of the day of deliverance of, again, the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, who was a direct descendant of the house of David and Solomon. And in fact, when he was interrogated over 200 plus years ago by the Russian government on trumped up charges that he was funding the Jews living in Israel at the time who had made Aliyah, ascended from Russia and other parts of Eastern Europe to go to the Holy Land, that he was actually doing it in a way that he was actually, you know, supporting the Turkish government, which at that time was ruling over the land of Israel. And this would seem to be an act of treason against the Russian government, when it wasn't his intent to to revolt against the Russian government, but rather to support the Jews living in Israel. So at the time of his being released, he was reading the following Psalms, chapter 55, verse 19. He redeemed my soul in peace from battles against me, because of the many who are with me. And may God who is enthroned, this is verse 20, may God who is enthroned from the days of old Selah, which is an expression meaning eternity, hear and humble those in whom there is no change and who do not fear God. In a little while, we're also going to connect this after the musical break to the concepts of Hanukkah. So I'm going to play a song now, which is basically a cappella. You'll hear Ari Lesser sing it, chant it, this out in English and a little bit in Hebrew, so please bear through the Hebrew, but you'll hear a sweet voice, which I think is a pleasure to hear, whether it be in Hebrew or English or Latin or Spanish or Arabic, whatever it be, but he's choosing to sing it in English and in Hebrew. This is Ari Lesser, Psalm 55, a song which was written in tribute to the redemption of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, actually the first Rebbe of Chabad, because Rebbe Shneur Zalman of Liad, he never lived in Lubavitch, his son, known as the Mittler Rebbe, did. But here's a song for us to give pause and think about the idea of being redeemed in peace. Hold on, everyone. We'll have about, it's about a almost 5-minute rendition. Enjoy.
Consume them, Lord, let their tongues be confused, for I've seen in the city the violence they do. Day and night they circle around, doing evil inside the walls of our town. Treachery and deception are there, deceit never leaves the public square, for it's not my foes who bring me disgrace. I could endure it if that were the case. If it was my enemy who magnified himself against me, I could just go high. But it's you, a man of my measure, my guide, my chief advisor on whom I relied. You and me used to walk excitedly, telling sweet secrets in God's sanctuary. May he bring death upon them, may they all descend alive to the grave. But they have wickedness and sin inside their bones, it's deep within. But as for me, to God I call, and the Lord will save me from them all. Evening, morning, at midday, I moan and groan, and he hears me pray. I said, evening, morning, at midday, I moan and groan, and he hears me pray. Pada b'shalom, nafshi mikrav li, ki berabim, ayu imadi. Pada v'shalom, nafshi mikrav li, ki berabim ayu imadim. Yishmakel ve'yane, yoshev kerem sela. Yishmakel ve'yane, yoshev kerem sela. Asher ein chalifos lamo, asher ein chalifos lamo, asher ein chalifos lamo, lo yahu Elokim. From war he redeemed my soul in peace, even as my many enemies increase. God enthroned from days of old will humble them, he will bring them low. Selah, he'll hear that they have no fear of God, and that won't change is clear. Against those at peace with him, he sent his hands, violated his covenant. His mouth, it was talking as smooth as butter, but war was in his heart when he uttered words that were as soft as oil. They were just a trap ready to recoil. Lay your load on the Lord, he'll keep you strong. He won't make the righteous shake for long. But violent men with deceitful ways will not live out even half their days. Oh God, you'll lower them in the end, to the well of destruction they will descend. But as for me, I trust in you, Lord. As for me, I trust in you. Anshe damim, damim u'mirma, lo lo yechzu, yechzu yimeihem. Anshe damim, damim u'mirma. ni etach bach, v'ani 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 etach bach, etach etach bach, ooh, v'ani etach bach, 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 etach etach bach.
Blessed soul. That was Ari Lesher in the end when he was singing Vani Eftanfok, I Will Trust in You. And I just want to give a little historical back there before we go into a brief discussion of Hanukkah, its application to Jews and for the blessed children of Noah, all nations of the world, that in the commentaries of this psalm, this was written by King David. And King David composed this psalm upon escaping from Jerusalem in the face of slanderers. Who were the slanderers at two different points in his life? He had two advisors. One was named Doeg. The other one was Achitophel. Both of them had declared him at different periods of his life. Doeg at the beginning of his kingship, and later at the end of King David's life, Achitophel, who instigated his son Avshalom to rebel against his father David. And Doeg, in the earlier years of David's reign, had declared him deserving of death. David had considered Achitophel a friend and accorded him the utmost honor. But Achitophel betrayed him and breached their covenant, as so did Doeg. Doeg was a tremendous scholar. So therefore, David curses all his enemies so that all generations should know and sin no more. Now, with that being said, blessed souls, we're turning to the idea of Hanukkah, which is basically brought down to, if we were bringing it down to an essential expression, why we celebrate and recall and give praises for the Creator for those days, in these days, and for all future days, even into the times of the Messiah, that in our liturgy, which we pray during the 8 days of Hanukkah, we, the Jewish people, we read the following during our prayers. And we thank you for the miracles, for the redemption, for the mighty deeds, for the saving acts, and for the wonders which you have wrought for our ancestors in those days at this time, because it was the days of Matisyahu, who was the son of Yochanan, the high priest of Israel, the Kohen Gadol, the Hashmonaim, and his sons, when the wicked Hellenist government rose up against your people Israel to make them forget your Torah and violate the decrees of your will. But you, in your abundant, abounding mercy, stood by them in the time of their distress. You waged their battles, defended their rights, and avenged the wrong done to them. You delivered the mighty into the hands of the weak, and the many into the hands of the few, the impure into the hands of the pure, the wicked into the hands of the righteous, and the wanton sinners into the hands of those who occupy themselves with your Torah. You made a great and holy name for yourself in this world and effected a great deliverance and redemption for your people in this very day. Then your children entered the shrine of your house, cleaned your temple, purified your sanctuary, kindled lights in your holy courtyards, and instituted these 8 days of Hanukkah to give thanks and praise to your great name. Now, let's go back a little bit. But the wicked Hellenist government is not talking about the Greek-Assyrian government. It was actually unfortunate to our great pain. And again, this is why I love the Torah lifestyle that I try to embrace every day and hope to embrace from now until the world to come, is that the Hellenic government were the Jewish people themselves who had betrayed their Torah ancestry. And when to the point where they were described in a way you might think we're talking about the Greek Assyrians. No, they actually had partnered with the Greek Assyrians to try to come up with statutes and decrees by informing the Greek Assyrians which decrees would be the most painful for us to try to adhere to, since they outlawed circumcision, they outlawed the women trying to practice the laws of purity, preparing themselves so when they can cohabit with the husbands and bring future children in a healthy manner, the eating of kosher food, the observance of Shabbos. And the point I want to bring up, blessed souls, is that where it says here in liturgy, You delivered the mighty into the hands of the weak. If we are weak, that doesn't mean we're going to get defeated. If we are few, that doesn't mean we're going to be delivered into the impure, the people who have thoughts which are, you know, insidiously against the idea that there is actually divine instruction. And the wicked, who could be in mass numbers, can be given over into the hands of those who are committed to the righteous way. And eventually what we saw in those days, and we're seeing slowly but surely, that those people, those wanton sinners into the hands of those who occupy yourselves with Torah, that doesn't mean the wanton sinners are going to be killed. No. I am going to be 100% and 1,000% transparent with you, but souls, I grew up as a Hellenistic type of Jew because I was so ignorant of my background, and I was given into the hands of those who occupied in Torah, themselves in Torah, and under the leadership of people who guided those who occupied themselves in Torah. And now I am, and I hope always to be blessed with the merit, to be one of those who encourage other people, go out of that way. But I'm not going to point fingers at particular people or particular movements, as much as I can tell you, blessed souls, the happiness I had, so to speak, with the Hellenistic lifestyle that I lived growing up here in America is not even one in 1,000 compared to the inner joy and peace and sense of contentment, sense of purpose, and sense of drive to make it a better world I now have as a Jew, as a human being who is observing Torah. And if I were to make a gamble, I would say for any son or daughter of Noah who would come to realize that there is a divine plan for them. They don't have to copy being Jews. They don't have to, you know, try to be like, they have to be like themselves. Because Lubavitcher Rebbe addressed this issue. When a person tries to be someone else, that's denying the divine providence that they were made in a certain way, which actually we brushed upon this point last week with Dennis and Rebecca Vanderwerth. So I'm going to go now and toss the ball over in this verbal exchange here, a verbal ball. I'll toss it over to Ron first about the idea that being weak and few has nothing to do with the calculation of how we can move advance in our lives in a victorious fashion if we choose to occupy ourselves in Torah, and in particularly for the Noah, children of Noah, the Noahide commandments. Ron, your take on these matters.
Well, numbers really doesn't count in terms of the quality of what you're connected to. When you're connected to the Creator, the weakness that you seem to perceive in yourself prior to that connection is because of the lack of the connection you have to the source of life. So weakness actually in terms of our inner feelings in relation to others or their deeds, it's only from our perception, and especially when we're not connected to the source of life. So it is written that God chose a very small nation, and not because of their numbers, chose the lowest of the mountains, Mount Sinai, to give his Torah. So we see that the Creator is not interested in strength of numbers. Even the Psalms, King David says, do not rely on the strength of a horse to win. Do not rely on nobles or princes to save you. So we see that all this man-made honor and stature and so-called strength that we seem to put our trust and faith in modern time, in money or our connections, they have no real strength. We have to connect to the source of life, and as you said before, you were living in a Hellenistic type of way as a person who didn't recognize his own source of strength. And I would say that even though you were a non-observant Jewish person at the time, and now you're observant, it also goes for the remainder of the nations of the world. Because it's just that we have to establish and strengthen our connection to the Creator, and that is where you acquire that strength and that happiness in which you spoke of that is nothing compared to what you had experienced before.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, Ron. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, we are what we are, but are we what we want to be? If you want to be wrapped in the folds of God, that is an internal protection that you have to make a conscious decision for, because that that involvement, that rapture, that protection that God affords you, protects you from the outside. So you may be in an environment that is not particularly or pleasant or whatever. You should know better that you personally believe in those things that are going to strengthen you because you have God with you. Faith or belief. You don't have much if you think you're just going to rely on your own wits and your own ego. So therefore, those people can find peace of mind, and I'm not saying happiness, at least peace of mind, knowing that you're doing the right thing by being wrapped in God so that you can defend yourself against all others. Now, all others may be your brothers, may be children of God, but they're not that at all times. So therefore, you have to recognize those people who also practice the same ideas you do, and that is we look towards God for help, salvation, and the future. So by wrapping ourselves in God, you will have some peace of mind.
True. And also the idea of the menorah as just a physical instrument of illumination, that let us not forget that just a little bit of light illuminates a lot of darkness. And it could be just that next verse of scripture. It could be that next prayer you utter. It could be that next act of kindness that you engage in, blessed souls, is the one thing that brings you on that path of discovering as long as you have your blessed 120 years here on this blessed earth, and everyone has their own 120 years with a little asterisk according to God's plan for how many years we should live out, change can take place. And what happened is that the Torah observant Jews were so oppressed, not only by the Greek Assyrians, by their own brothers, that they got to the point where they said, we're going to make a change. And also, one of the core issues of Hanukkah that really got to the point, so to speak, the straw that broke the camel's back, was when a group of Kohanim, called the Hasmonaim, that there was a public gathering where a Jew by the name of Yehoshua became Hellenized and started calling himself Jason, and he was going to at the issuance of a statement, who will offer up a certain item as a sacrifice to an idol, and he said, I will do it. And Matisyahu, who was then an elderly Cohen, promptly had killed him before he was able to carry out the act of idolatry. I want to be very careful now when I say this, blessed souls. That was in those days when the Jews had sovereignty, full sovereignty in their land. We don't even today, even though there's a modern state of Israel, we don't have true sovereignty as we once did. So I'm not promoting the idea of people becoming Charles Bronson vigilantes from that movie. I forgot what the movie was called. Becoming vigilantes if people see other people performing acts of idolatry. Because first of all, a person has to know what truly idolatry is. So one of the seminal points that connects the Jewish story of Hanukkah to the general service of all mankind was that the point that triggered the revolt of the small group of Kohanim against the Hellenized Jewish government and ultimately against the Greek Assyrians was that it got to the core of their souls, which they couldn't take it any longer. We will not allow our brothers or brethren, whatever you want to say, to encourage others, to give a public demonstration, to turn the streets of Israel in those days into a classroom for promoting idolatry. So in our days, we should understand, blessed souls, that there's not just the simple understood as idolatry according to Torah law and the seven high commandments, that there's this idea of the very word idolatry in Hebrew, avodah zarah, it's a strange service. So this is a time, hopefully, for strengthening ourselves to realize, is my service one to the Creator, or is it a strange service which is demonstrating to others and to encourage others to engage in strange services to the Creator, which are contrary to the Creator's plan, which is, again, to have a world emptied of jealousy, emptied of hatred, emptied of unnecessary competition. I'm not, again, we're not promoting socialism, communism. We're not even promoting capitalism. I mean, these isms exist, and we're not here to topple economic systems here on this program. But the idea is that, you know, all of these systems are relatively short-lived, only 300-400 years old at the most, but people have been conducting themselves in commerce and calling it by other names for thousands and thousands of years. So the idea of people interacting economically, intellectually, spiritually, is the marketplace of human experience. So now I'm going to defer to Ron for any comments on this, and then Dennis, and then we'll move on to our next section.
Presently, I have no comment on. Continue with Dennis.
Dennis?
Yeah, well, we have an expression for that. It seems very simple, but it has a deep meaning. It is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. If you feel depressed and the world is coming down around you, don't get rutted in your own thoughts. Do something about it. Do something. Don't let the environment control your thinking, your mind, and what you really want to do. So that if you're positive and you have an objective that you're going to try to attain, that's doing something. That's positive.
True. And as a preface to this next teaching from Rabbi Nachman, when I was living in Israel, I was working in a Beis Chabad, a place where we, you know, sold mezuzahs and tefillin phylacteries and other religious articles, and we try to help the people, the good people of Chulon, which is the fourth largest city in Israel. Literally, it's the city of sand. It used to be a desert. Now it's been transformed into the fourth largest city in Israel in the last 65 years. Someone came into the store and told me there was a teaching of Rabbi Nachman that when a person feels depressed, one of the things that he or she can do is get up and dance. Because the action of stamping your feet on the ground and flailing your arms around, of course, you have to do it in a way that's socially appropriate. You don't want to wind up in a psychiatric ward if you're doing it in the middle of Macy's or Bambergers or, I don't know, you know, Burger King or whatever, wherever place you are, or in, you know, some kosher restaurant. But you find the appropriate place, and the intention is when you're stamping on the ground with your feet, that your intention is to stamp out the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which is trying to drag you down into the pit with depression. So that being said, Rabbi Nachman said in Lakuti Moran, which is basically like his seminal work, among other works, books that actually he never wrote, but gave over to his top student, Rabbi Nassan, or Nathan. Rabbi Nachman says, there are two types of days. Lo and behold, we're not surprised by these two types of days. Generally speaking, there are good days and there's bad days. Now, with that being said, it is written in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 14, King Solomon taught us, so on a day of good fortune, enjoy the good fortune, and on a day of misfortune, look. So what's going on here? So on a day of good fortune, we should focus in that peace can balance all opposites. Shalom is, as Dennis mentioned in his opening statement on the show, Shaloma, or Salam you could say in Arabic, that there must be a balance between good and bad. Now, the reason for this is that the advantage of either good or evil, of either good or evil can clearly outweigh the other. Then in effect, there would be no free will. But as long as a person is going to live his life, one is assured that he'll have good days and bad days. He still must be able to get through the good days and the bad days with Bechira Chafshi's free choice. Therefore, the one day that was good in opposition to the one day that wasn't as good was ultimately connected to the doings of the Creator. And a person should choose a path, whatever way he wants to follow, in order to try to deal with his good days, or she, with his good days or bad days. Now, good days are associated with, excuse me, Torah. Because it says in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 2, "For I have given you good instruction, do not forsake my Torah." So good days corresponds to Torah. For wherever there is Torah, there is good. And of course, on a bad day, that's a day, within this perspective, where one is not accessing divine instruction. So on a day where, for whatever reason, a person is prevented from learning divine instruction, just call Torah, you can call it Bible, doesn't really matter to me, whatever that term is in Aramaic or Arabic or Spanish or Arabic, doesn't matter to me. On a day where a person is having a bad day, that's a day where a person can say, well, this day could be bad because even if it's, so to speak, a men's day, half day, they haven't accessed divine instruction. So when a person has that type of day and sees, oh, this day was not as good as it should have been, or it was a bad day, he should look forward to see that the next day, what can he or she do to fill their days with good, to fill up some of their time, as much as possible, with divine instruction. Ron, your take on these matters.
Okay, I was actually reviewing that verse in Ecclesiastes, the Stones edition of the Tanakh,
mm-hmm.
And I see here they use the word, I'll just read over that verse, "Observe God's doing, for who can straighten what he has twisted? Be pleased when things go well, but in a time of misfortune reflect. God has made one as well as the other."
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just go back to what I said earlier in the program, that, you know, the Creator has created everything for man's benefit. And those so-called not good days in which we experience, those days were also created by him. And if we basically reflect on the good days and also on the fact that God created them all, then we may even be able to salvage good out of those so-called not good days that we're having and actually transform it into a good day.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Yeah, I look at it differently, but I think we end up in the same place, Don and Ron, and that is that each day is a day given to us by God. What we do from a human perspective makes it good or bad. However, we can always recover. In other words, we have to make decisions. Sometimes we don't make the correct decisions. But we learn from our decisions, which are sometimes called mistakes. But we can always recover. God will forgive you. So therefore, we do not sit around and contemplate the grass growing on the ground, because that's not a worthy deed or action. You have to get up, be active, and do things. You have to produce things, and you have to satisfy the reason as to why you're here. And that is a test. So you must be able to perform and show that you're doing your best. But if you make a decision that's not the best, you can always ask for forgiveness. God forgives us all if you ask.
Beautiful. Now we're going to turn to something which is related tangentially, but perhaps from another perspective, if we do greater meditation on the matter, it's directly connected to this discussion we've had concerning good days and bad days, and also, excuse me, the brief discussion we had about Hanukkah. Excuse me one second. Sorry about that. This is going back to the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, verse 7, where King Solomon taught us that the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. And in the explanation of the word knowledge, which is the Hebrew word of da'as or da'at, it's to know, the beginning of the fearing the Creator is the beginning of knowing the truth. And in wisdom, which is associated with, of course, ultimately with divine instruction or Torah, and instruction that fools and those who want to cast off the yoke of the responsibilities of human beings, well, they make light of it. And Rashi, again, who was the primary elucidator of the five books of Gnosis, but also has very potent explanations, elucidations on the Tanakh, and say like a teaching like this in Proverbs, which is called Mishle in Hebrew, that he mentions that the essential offering of knowledge, meaning what we should extract out of our knowledge, is to come to some sort of proximity day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, in our entire lifetime, to come to know the truth. And in order for that to take place, we have to be humbled by the idea that whatever wisdom we can accumulate in our lifetime, it must be preceded by a fear. And I say a healthy fear, not an unhealthy fear, but a healthy fear of the one who has formed us. And that will be able to empower us to be given within our hearts to do, to conduct our lives with wisdom and in truth. And because people who are in the getter of Evilim, these are people who are people who wish to cast off the yoke of their human responsibility in denial of their divine image. One who want to promote the idea that we are just animals, or we come from monkeys or pigs or whatever they want to, or we come from just one cell amoebas, specimens, they do not fear the high creator. Therefore, they despise wisdom and they despise instruction, which is something unfortunate which took place over 2,000 years ago on the part of the Hellenist government, which led to, again, that those bad days, or that bad day consciousness of the Hellenist government, led to the rebellion of the Hasmonaim, that small group of Kohanim who lived in Modi'in, which I've been there. It's a wonderful place to visit in Israel. That led to the resurrection of a consciousness, which led to the establishment of such a holiday where we, again, celebrate the idea that fear of the Creator gives one strength, it gives one's knowledge, and it gives one the ability to seek the truth. Now, the truth that we will access, we have to be humbled by, again, the idea, blessed souls, no matter how much we acknowledge that the Torah or the Bible, scripture and written and oral traditions are the truth, we still have to be tempered and humbled by the idea it's according to our microscopic and sometimes myopic perception that is ours. And we shouldn't assume everyone sees it the way we do. That's why we try to have these discussions with other human beings, that from the discussions of one myopic human being with another myopic human being in relation to the truly divine consciousness, which is solely tucked within the will and wisdom of the Creator himself, who is infinite, that we can come to a higher consciousness and become a little less myopic in our human living experiences. Dennis, your take on these matters.
The take on the matter is the word fear. It has a spiritual and a religious meaning. At the same time, it has an ordinary human meaning. And we have to be careful that we don't interchange these. The human meaning is that you do something because you're afraid of the punishment. Fear of retaliation. However, the real spiritual meaning of the word fear is that you must understand how powerful and almighty God is. Therefore, you should be humbled. If you are humbled, then you're motivated not out of fear of retaliation, but the realization that we're under control of an entity that controls everything in our lives. And one example of this would be some people think that they can control Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Let them try over and over and over. You can't stop Mother Nature. You can't reject it. It's here. So if you're having a hard time with Mother Nature, think of how much of a hard time you're going to have with God, so you don't even attempt it. So the fear is that you don't recognize what type of environment you're on, in, or living, or doing, because you must have that realization so that you can be humble enough to say, well, now I know my position in relation to the Creator. Now you can now approach it. How can we shorten the distance between how you can shorten the distance between you and your Creator. That is not a negative idea. It's a positive idea.
Mm-hmm.
We fear Him because we recognize the majesty of the Lord and how humble we are. That is the motivation. Now, I realize I'm taking it sort of out of context here, but I rather think of it as a positive concept than a negative one, because the ordinary humans use the word fear on a negative basis, and our God is good.
Mm-hmm. Ron, can you offer your viewpoints with us now on these matters?
Well, basically, I'm just going to add a little bit to Dennis, what Dennis just mentioned, and another word we can use to kind of to explain more or less what you just mentioned in place of fear is awe of the Creator. Because that is closely linked to the majesticness of God and creation, where we basically stand in awe with an open mouth at the creation of the heavens and the earth, and that's the awe that we have towards the Creator, and within that awe is the fear of transgressing His will. And I'm going to read a small section here from the Torah Anthology,
mm-hmm.
By the company. Company was Naim, I think, is the publishers.
Yes.
And it's called the Book of Mishlei, the Book of Proverbs. It says, when there's no fear of God, there can be no lasting moral discipline or any kind of true learning. What is the fear of God? It is the knowledge that God created the world by His absolute will, and that He knows and is attentive, rewards and punishes. Not knowledge, but fear of God is man's ultimate purpose, with knowledge as a means towards that end.
Beautiful. Dennis, I'll give you the last word on this before we move to our last section, discussing verses 4 and 5 from the book of Genesis, chapter 4.
It all depends how you look at it. We have a good God who's positive and will forgive you for almost just about anything, I guess. So therefore, how much fear can you really have if you know that you make a mistake, but if you honestly ask God for forgiveness, He'll accept it. So Therefore, we got to be careful with these parallel ideas, because we cannot mix and match, and what is God's is God's, what is human's is human's.
True, and I think that if I can throw in my two cents here, is that Rambam mentions in the Laws of Tshuva. In fact, unfortunately, I misplaced the book where I have English translations, which would make it easier for me to share with the Blessed Soul experience out there listening to us live or hopefully in the archive version, that he talks about the moment that a person makes that decision to want to turn back to the Creator, he or she is loved, as opposed to the moment before where they were living a life of lacking consciousness or the way of the Avilim, the foolish ones, they are despised. But they are causing their own, they are despised from their own actions, not that they're accessing, so to speak, a reaction from heaven that's supposed to be, is basically acting as a feedback mechanism system that they are despised. But ultimately, the fact that at the very same time that a person is foolish and despised, at the very same too, they're being given life by the Creator, where they are acting not in accordance with His, you know, will and wisdom. So there's a lot of flexibility, plasticity, as you know, to use the modern term, in terms of how divine consciousness or the Creator Himself interacts with us. It's basically, you know, what comes around goes around. So in the moment when a person decides, I am in fact a child of God, which every human being should be educated to feel that way, and they should feel that they are loved by God, which they in fact are by the very fact that they're being given life. So hopefully that will help them make the right decisions in life. Now, what we're going to be turning to right now, blessed souls, is...
Don?
Yeah.
That wasn't 2 cents. That was $20.
Thank you, Dennis. We're moving on to chapter 4, verses 4 and 5 in Genesis. Abel also offered some of the firstborn of his flock from the fattest ones, meaning the choicest ones. So God paid heed to Abel and his offering. But to Cain and his offering, he paid no heed. Cain was sorely grieved. And literally, I mean, in the Hebrew it reads as his face, if we translate into the from the Hebrew to English, his face fell, meaning he became sad. So this is where there is a problem, blessed souls, with basically the first case, the first documented case of a human having a fallen countenance, or for lack of a better word, becoming depressed because they weren't given the same attention as another human being who happened to be one's own flesh and blood, one's own brother. So what was so great that Abel, or Hevel, as his name is in the original language, that it was, the Torah was written in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, what did he do that was so great that the Creator gave him attention? Because he gave of the best that he knew would be the choicest portion of his flock. Now, I just want to remind everyone, from where would Abel know that he should offer up some of his livestock? Because obviously he had learned from his father, a prophet. And while we'll see later on, in the next verse, hopefully next week, where God speaks to Cain, so obviously Cain was a prophet as well, a fallen prophet, I am pretty confident that Abel, or Hevel, was a prophet as well, being born of prophetic parents, originally man and woman, Adam and Eve. So this idea of giving of the choicest, in this case of species, but let's say we give the choicest of our thoughts, the choicest of our speech, the choicest of our actions to the Creator to empower another human being, this is an expression that we truly believe that the holiness which emanates out of the Most High is something which can permeate all of creation. That this idea is that human beings can partner with the Creator on the most microcosmic level of extending the idea that there is no other reality and distinctions outside of the Creator himself, and any distinctions which can appear within the human life experience, that Abel had demonstrated, and I'm plucking here from a teaching from actually the Rambam here, believe it or not, that Abel was demonstrating that his relationship with God was not an afterthought, but rather the focus of his life. And Rambam, this is where we bring in the Rambam, derives from this verse that we should always offer our finest to God. When we build a house of prayer, we should make it nice to their own house. When we feed the hungry, we should offer the best and sweetest delicacies of our table. When we clothe the naked, we should give him our best suit. Not that our best effort should be just to stuff ourselves and shop until we drop. Throwing a little verbal dagger into the whole concept of Black Friday. I'm sorry. I mean, I hope it will be a productive day. And I just want to mention, just so people shouldn't think I'm anti-capitalist, those who profit well on Black Friday, hopefully they'll remember to give, to tithe out what they're making, because charity is something which not only gives life to the receiver of the charity, it gives life to the giver of the charity. So now let's turn to Ron, and then we'll go to Dennis for his thoughts on these matters.
I would just use one word to describe this situation in which Cain and Abel found themselves in that Cain felt also, besides being neglected, jealous of his brother. And instead of using that opportunity to improve on himself, he chose instead to become, you know, he allowed himself to become frustrated and angry. And as a result, this misplaced emotions actually led to him, you know, killing his own brother.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, early on in the program when we spoke of a person feeling bitter or sad or rejected because they didn't feel accomplished, we see here that that's basically misplaced emotions, and instead that person should look into what would help them as opposed to becoming angry and frustrated at the situation.
Dennis, your take on the matter.
Yes, everything happened to the early humans or events still happens today to all humans.
That's right.
Nothing has changed. The question
right.
is, have we really learned from it? For some reason or another, time goes by and we read historically or today's newspaper all the terrible things that humans do to other humans. It doesn't end. However, we still have to live our lives and we have to do it on a positive basis. So what was this subject matter you were just talking about? Because I lost my train of thought, Don.
That Abel had offered the best of what he had to offer to
oh,
the
okay.
critics.
Yeah, what happens is my thought is that if you feel or sense God, you realize the majesty and the power that the Creator has. So therefore, you should be humbled. When you're humbled, you have to say, it hits you, or your conscience wakes you up and says, you got to give something back. You can't keep taking, taking, taking. You said it's a bond, it's a two-way street. It's not a partnership, it's a bonding. Partnership means there's equality there, so we don't want to go there, Don. But there is a bond between God, our Creator, and any human that wants to start a bond, strengthen it, let it grow, whatever. It's there. So therefore, we feel like we have to give something back. And what we do is, because we are humbled, we believe we have to give the best back that we can. Not the only thing we have, and we're not going to cut off our hand and give it back to God, because God gave us our hand. So therefore, we have to be careful as to what we offer up as meaningful, because it has to make a difference to God. So we can only do on a human level what we believe is best. So we're limited. But that doesn't mean you stop.
Right. I just want to respond, Dennis, and just respectfully disagree on the idea of partnership, because there is a Talmudic teaching that there are three partners in the creation of a human being, the mother, father, and God. Now, that doesn't mean there's equality between man and woman, husband and wife, and God. I look at it as like a type of a partnership where God is 99% owner, and we are the minority partners in God's plan. So in that context, I mean it.
Don, here we go again with a word that's used from a spiritual viewpoint and a word that's also used by common humans out on the street. They don't mean the same, and the explanation for them is different. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying it would be better to use a word that's more personal between a human and a God as opposed to a human to a human.
Okay. Well, I mean, how about stewardship?
There you
Stewardy.
Go.
Okay, very good.
That was $50 now you're up to.
Well, you mean, Dennis, are you implying I'm getting in the black?
Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Okay. Don, I'm afraid, you know, Black Friday is going to now be a little more appropriate for you, seeing that you're acquiring this much wealth, you know?
Well, I let me put it this
way. That would be the correct usage.
Listen, if it become Dennis's and Ron's and Don's version of Black Friday of giving, well, then Black Friday has been elevated to the point of something very positive. But with that being said, gentlemen, and as we're closing out in our final minutes here, so Cain became grieved. Now, there's a teaching here that said that, yes, we on one point we could say, well, since Cain and Abel were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, they weren't accessing openly as they once were at the beginning of their lives, because they did have some moments. I don't know exactly the amount of time they are. And we mentioned several weeks back when we in our program, or a couple months back, that Adam and Eve, according to the oral Torah tradition, when they were created in the Garden of Eden, they weren't created as babies in diapers, because after all, who were their nursemaids? They were basically at the age of 20 years old. And Eve conceived of them in the Garden of Eden before they were kicked out. Again, that's truly higher than nature type of conduct that a woman could be impregnated and give birth that very same day. So, but Cain and Abel actually were their lives did they were the oral Torah tradition dictates that they were born. He was born, Cain, in the Garden of Eden. So he had some sort of residue of spirituality, of that pristine consciousness, whatever exists in the Garden of Eden. Maybe we access it very speedily in our days with the coming of the Messiah. So Cain could in fact exercise free choice. The problem that Cain experienced, which we, as Dennis mentioned before, the historical accounts we're learning about applies in our days, is that he did not learn from his mistake, and his failure was he didn't learn how, if he had merely turned in the direction of his brother Abel had, and then said, okay, God, I forgive me, I didn't give you my best, I'll now give you my best, his offering would have been accepted. But instead he fell into depression. And unfortunately, Blessed Souls, as a worker in the mental health field, as they say, there's two sides to every coin. The other side of the coin of depression is anger. And unfortunately, what's inscribed on the side of the coin of anger, in this case, as we'll learn, hopefully in future programs, is violence. So, with that being said, I'll let Dennis and Ron make their concluding comments and reaction to what I just said, and then we'll say go way out with our favorite flagship ending music of David Dohm. Dennis, your take on this matter.
When Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, they had experienced some disappointment. Depression is a degree of disappointment. But mm-hmm. they recovered. Mankind is still going on. And the whole system works. God bless.
Ron.
We're given the opportunity to learn from the mistakes of others, and unfortunately, Cain and Abel didn't really have that advantage in terms of, you know,
true.
Seeing what this behavior would lead to. And we should remember always that we don't have to always experience downfall. We can learn from the mistakes of others.
Mm-hmm. And I guess when, Rabbi Shlomo Karbach, may he rest in peace, wrote a song based on some oral Torah tradition that there will come a day when all the Cains and Abels will resurrect at the great day of judgment, and the Cains of the world, those who committed premeditated murder, will ask for forgiveness of the Abels that they had murdered in a premeditated fashion, and the Abels of the world will forgive them, and there will be a great celebration that forgiveness has been granted by the one who was wronged, and the one who did the wrong will ask for forgiveness. So we'll just have to see how that plays out in the scheme of all the revelations of the days of Messiah, which hopefully, I mean, beyond the days of Messiah, the day of great judgment. With that being said, I want to profusely thank Dennis Ryan and Ron Williams for coming on the show, because, gentlemen, your time is one of your most, if not your most valuable commodity, while your soul is enclosed in your blessed soul is enclosed in your blessed body, empowered by your Tzelem Elohim, your divine image. And I want to wish you both a blessing as a fellow human being, also blessed and anointed with a divine image, that we should all be blessed to carry the message to every person we encounter in the appropriate circumstances, and may the Creator give us more and more appropriate circumstances, that the right words will come from our mouths, that we should remind people, don't reserve a day of thanks just for one day a year, or one day a week, but every day of the year, and as much as you can during the day of each day that we are blessed to live upon this blessed earth, and may this transpire in a peaceful and pleasant manner. So I'll now allow, I ask humbly that, Dennis, you give your sign-off statement to today's show, and then Ron.
Love God, and He'll love you.
Amen. Ron.
Peace and goodwill should reign among men, for this is
amen.
Hopefully the desire of the Creator.
Amen. Amen. So that being said, blessed souls, we're going to end off with our flagship ending song to our soul class, In Search of Ancient Authentic Torah by David Dohm, will help us get off and get back home to the place of our divine image, which is the place to scrimmage the Tselem Elohim is no dream. You have got to be good because the Teva Tov Lehetiv, it is the nature of the good to do good, and the Most High, who is the source of all goodness, put you on this earth to make this place the Shevet Yitzra. As it says in the prophecy of Isaiah 42:18, the world was created to be a settled place, not to be a place of chaos. We don't need chaos because it doesn't the world any more sustainable. So remember, blessed souls, as David Dom says, every day is a mirror. What is the reflection you see in your own personal life experience mirror? Take care, everyone. Until next week, a happy Thanksgiving today. We're not going to wait and say happy Thanksgiving on this coming Thursday, but happy Thanksgiving to you today. Make his deeds known among the nations in this generation, the time of celebration. Take care, everyone.
Shalom.